taxation number 11474, Rule 3.
Mr. Riding Reel 3, you were saying you were heading towards Caen?
Yes, that's right. We had the various... When I did stop occasionally with French people, they did get a bit of news through, and I had heard that Canadian and British armies were still held at Caen, but that there was movement round towards Paris by the Americans. So I thought, well, I better keep going straight as I could, making my way slowly towards our Allied lines in the Caen area. And I was heading towards Caen via Le Cher and a place called Thiverville. When one evening I was in this bocage, this sunken road, and I was checking the map in the evening to see where I was. And this this hay cart passed above the hedge, because these roads are sunken in the bocage. And this hay cart was at high level. And this farmer and this young girl looked down at me, and I thought nothing of it. I put the map away quickly and went on my way. And the following morning, that night I slept in his hayfield, and the following morning I started off. And he was coming down this sunken road towards me, was this French farmer. And I always remember, he just spoke two words. He said, "Bonjour, monsieur, êtes-vous perdu?" Was I lost? And I said, "No, monsieur." He said, "Ah, you are Tommy. You are Anglais." And I didn't know what to think at the time. I had a Luger pistol. I'd stepped a Luger pistol, but I didn't want to draw it. And he said, "Come with me." And I understood, "Come with me." And I went to this little farmhouse, really tucked away, right in the middle of the bocage, no roads, nothing. And there he had a young daughter, Elaine, 16. And this little boy, Guy, aged 5, and his wife. And they looked after me for the best part of 2 weeks. I had to sleep in a small hut, and I had to go underground during the day in a sort of hole in the ground, but they looked after me very well. And then time came to move me on, and they moved me on to Thiverville, and I moved by horse and cart, I remember, with a white sheet over it, in case any aircraft... That was the recognition signal, a white sheet, to tell the Allied aircraft that they were French people on the move on the roads, because as I've said before, everything that moved on the roads was a possible target for our fighter bombers. And we arrived at Thiverville, and I was passed there to a little woodcutter's cottage, and then I moved into the town of Thiverville. And stayed with a butcher, and I stayed with various shops. I stayed in all these places in Thiverville, and I began to get a bit worried that the whole village seemed to know I was there, but, you know, I wasn't. And then it was towards the end of August, about middle of August, and a low-level aircraft came over dropping leaflets. I think it was a Mitchell or a Boston. And these leaflets said that the Allies were coming through very soon, and that you had to go to the country and try and hide yourself in a sort of refuge somewhere and take food and water. So these people that I was with, they had a little cottage just outside Thiverville, and we moved out there, about 8 or 12 people, and we went into this, they made a sort of little hole in the ground, and we were all there, all of us. And there was a Tiger tank on two nights in the orchard near us, shelling away, moving around. And then one morning I said, "Well, I think it's all quiet. I think I'll go to the bottom of the road," which was about 500 or 600 yards away. And I went to this little sunken road, fell down through the hedge into the arms of a Canadian soldier of the Toronto Scottish. And the Canadians were coming through. And Toronto Scottish, I always remember. And they were in their jeeps, and they took me into Thiverville, and I went to see the town major. They set up a town major in all these towns when they occupied them, or villages. And he said, "Well, I have no transport going forward, no transport going back. best enjoy yourself here for a couple of days. And we did enjoy ourselves too. The whole town was going mad with celebrations, obviously, being liberated. And the troops were passing through, and they were giving them all the wine and flowers. The recce cars were coming back, bedecked with flowers. And I stayed there for 2 days, and the town major said that there is a special RAF squad. They will come through here eventually, mostly French-Canadian speaking, and they're on the lookout for people like you and for information about crashed aircraft and everything like that. And true enough, they did come through, and he sent them to where I was, and they took me back to Lisieux, where I was deloused. All my French clothing was taken off me, and I was put into army battle dress, and I was flown back, funnily enough, to Northolt, the very place I'd taken off from, by Dakota. And I was taken then to some hotel, I don't know where it was now, in London, for debriefing.
What did the attitude of the French civilians whom you mixed with seem to be towards the Germans and the German occupation, from what you could gather?
Well, when they say sale boche, they meant it. They hated the Germans, really hated them. All the people that helped me hated the Germans. And having still seeing them to this day now, some of them I'm still in contact with, some of them. And they come here, and I've been to France, and they're still the same. They're not very happy with the Germans at all.
What was it specifically about the Germans?
Ill treatment, yeah.
Not just the mere fact that they were
there? No, and the fact that they'd occupied France, of course, yeah.
Did you come across French people who warned you about French collaborators?
Yes, one or two, yes. You have to be... You know, two people came once to the house. I remember where I was at one house in Thiberville, and she told me to go upstairs and pas descendre, don't descend, pas descendre, stay up there. And they knew more or less the people that they couldn't trust. But when you were on the run, that was the difficulty. You had to have water, you had to have something to eat, and you had to seek assistance somewhere. Eventually, I mean, you might do 2 days without, but you have to have water and some assistance somehow. You have to have sustenance to keep going. And so you would do a reconnaissance of the little farm, and they'd say keep an eye out, and if there was any signs of German activity, and then take a chance on it. But in the main, I was lucky, and when I wasn't lucky, I was told to allez, tout suite, go, quickly. And whether they betrayed me after that, I don't know. But I was either helped or told to go. I was never taken in and then reported, obviously, otherwise I'd have never got here, never got back.
Coming back to the resistance group with which you were working, can you remember the individuals who were in it or who led it?
No, really. I know one or two of the names, like, and I have... and the people that I have been in touch with afterwards. As I say, I still see this French girl, who Elaine, who was on the hay cart. I still see Jean, who was the first farm I went to. I still see Jean from Thiberville, who was at the ironmonger's shop. He's got his own business there. And I see Guy, the little five-year-old lad, who's now a pilot with the French Internal Air Force, a French Internal Airline. But I have never made any contact whatsoever with the resistance people. I've been to the area, we've been into the area and asked, but we have made no contacts at all. The people who I've made contact with and still keep in contact are the people who helped me on my way, privately, if you like, if that's the word.
You gave the impression when you were telling me about the resistance group that you felt they were rather unduly reckless.
Yes, very reckless. I mean, it was nothing to be... I mean, it was weather like this in the main. In the weather that we've been having just recently in this country, I mean, beautiful, clear, sunny, warm days. I mean, fortunately, in the main, that was what the French summer was like in the most part of July and August. And it was good to be on the run in that sort of climate. But when I was with the resistance, I mean, we were obviously so many, we were always sat out under the trees and orchards. They were always playing with their weapons. There was always false shots being sent off. They had no discipline whatsoever. And if the Germans hadn't have attacked us and I'd have got... I was, even before then, desperately attempting to get away, but they wouldn't let me go. Once you were with them, they held on to you.
Because of your skills?
Well, I would like to think that, but I rather suspect that they felt that if I got away and was caught, then I was a potential risk to divulge the headquarters or where they were located and what have you. I don't think they were holding on to me because of the fact that I taught them a bit about gunnery.
What is the Caterpillar Club that you belong to?
Well, Caterpillar Club is a society formed by the Irving Parachute Company, who made all the parachutes, and anybody can become a member of the Caterpillar Club if they bailed out from an aircraft in an emergency to save their lives. So you can have members of the Caterpillar Club who have made a descent from an aircraft, not necessarily on operations, because it failed through engine failure or was about to crash. In the main, of course, most of the people who are members of the Caterpillar Club have been shot, are members purely because they escaped from the aircraft due to enemy action.
Is it the Second World War Club, purely and simply?
I rather think so, because if I remember about the First World War flying, they were not equipped with parachutes.
So it's not for those subsequent to the Second World War?
Oh yes, I do believe so, yes. Oh yes, I do believe if, for instance, you were talking, if I may say this in this interview time, you were talking earlier on about having met Mrs. Lucas Harrison of the Royal Air Force Escaping Society. Now, there was a pilot who ejected in the Falklands and landed behind enemy lines and did, in fact, get back. Under similar circumstances, the area was occupied and he hid himself until he was occupied, until the occupying troops took over again, until our lads came through. Now, he will obviously qualify for the Caterpillar membership, and I understand that he's a member of the Royal Air Force Escaping Society.
Why is it called the Caterpillar Club?
Because the caterpillar is the silkworm which made the silk. And the silk was, in fact, the parachute. In fact, I have there, which I can show you, which as a subsequent trip on when I went back to the 40th anniversary of D-Day in 1984, and I met for the first time Jean, who had been at the very first farm I went to. He had three sisters who I must say at this stage I only remembered one of them. But I told you at the time that he had retained my pilot chute. Well, he kept my pilot chute, and his eldest sister crocheted a handkerchief from it. And when I went back in 1984, she was living in southern France then, but when she knew that I was still alive and had made it back home, she insisted on me having it. And it's over there. I can show it you after the interview.
What does the Caterpillar Club do?
We have various branches. We have a reunion every year. We sponsor old comradeship and various reunions. We don't assist by charities, because most of the lads who are in the Caterpillar Club are in the Royal Air Force Associations, and they are the people who generally collect on the benevolent and what have you. It's just a club purely of members who have saved their life by bailing out from an aircraft by the use of a parachute. And as such, we have local groups. We did have a local group here in Hull. We had about 35 members, but people have died and people have moved and people have passed on and what have you. And But I'm afraid the group doesn't operate anymore, but there are still quite a few of us who belong to the local aircrew association.